This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome in. Badgers fresh off an extended scrimmage on Saturday. Badgers, I should say, essentially their spring game. And there were some jokes going around the field as the Crazy Legs run was going past the north practice field. And there were some jokes being made that it was the largest attended spring game in quite some time. I would never make such a crass joke like that, but I know that there were people making that joke. So, but it was a perfect day outside of the wind. And it was a perfect day for the offense to show how far it's come, Jesse, from this time last year. And we got to talk with Phil Longo and Mike Tressel after practice. And I certainly do think that, because it's a question I got a number of times, like, where is the offense compared to this time last year? And after the first two drives of the offense, felt like they had scored more points in that than they did the entire launch last year at Camp Randall. Not overly fair just because of the weather that day too, but you know, and you asked Phil Longo about it. It feels like the offense is farther ahead. Again, I'm not going to say that it is going to be a 35 or 40 point offense per game this fall, but it's clear at this point right now they're so much more comfortable, and that includes obviously the quarterbacks.
Right, spring games or spring scrimmages, what this was, are not the end all be all when it comes to what you're going to see in September. But I think sometimes it can be an indication of where things are headed. For example, as we remember, last year they had the launch. It was the only publicly attended practice of the spring. I know the weather was insane, but it was not a very good day for the offense. Tanner Mordecai threw interceptions on each of his first three drives with the first team offense and finished with four picks total. And just watching that day, you could kind of see, oh, maybe year one is not going to go as people wanted it to go. And it did take quite a bit of time. Obviously, we know the offense scored its fewest points per game in 19 seasons. And so when you juxtapose that spring scrimmage slash game with this spring scrimmage, I feel like we've seen a lot of progress with the offense. And we've heard Phil Longo talk about this on the couple of occasions we've had a chance to meet with him here the last couple of months. But he said, and one of the things he said when I asked him that question about it, he said, I'm being transparent. This just feels more what I'm used to. And he went on to talk about how last year it wasn't just transitioning with a new offense and defense. It was the fact that coaches still didn't know where certain rooms were in the building and they were still coaching the coaches. But from an on-field production standpoint, it does feel like they are much further ahead. And by the unofficial tally that I had, there were seven touchdown drives, six of which came from the first and second team offenses. And yes, some of those drives started in plus territory, and so the defense was backed up. But still, not all those drives did. There were some really good drives by those offenses with both largely Tyler Van Dyke, but Braden Locke had a touchdown drive as well. And I think that that has to be considered an encouraging sign based on where we were a year ago and what we saw on the field last season.
Yeah, again, I'm not going to say that it is going to translate to the fall. We just don't know. But him feeling more comfortable and essentially, as you said, like, this is more what he has come to expect from his offenses in general, right? Like, this is just the ability to throw the ball, the ability to run the ball, the ability to do, you know, whatever the defense is going to give you. And we heard that so much last year, and it just felt like they just never truly, truly got on track. But the quarterback situation is another thing that has developed, I certainly think, over the last four practices. And I know I said last Saturday was the best practice that I had seen from Tyler Van Dyke. Saturday was another good one. And so I would say these last four practices, it feels like it's still a competition, but he's nudged ahead a little bit here. And again, as we've talked about throughout the spring, this is something that's going to go into fall camp. Phil Longo said as much. Like, they've each had good days, they've each had bad days. There's no one's jumped up and grabbed it to the point where he doesn't even have to make a decision. It's not that point. But I certainly think that we've seen some movement there these last four practices.
That is absolutely my sense as well. I think Tyler keeps getting better and better as spring practice finishes out. And a lot of that has to do with he just looks so much more comfortable in how he's running the offense, the throws he's making, the reads he's making, not just in the passing game, but in the run game as well. And this is why they went and got him. And even though Longo said after practice that it was too early to make any definitive determinations, you are starting to see more and more of what Tyler can provide. And I talked about those half a dozen scoring drives, touchdown drives that we saw, that Tyler was in there for a lot of them. And he had several pretty passes. He threw a 14-yard touchdown pass to Tyrell Henry. It was a perfectly floated ball down the right sideline against a reserve cornerback. And then on another drive, an absolute dart to Bryson Green, again down the right sideline. It was a 26-yard gain. He threw it over a defensive back and right before safety Hunter Wohler could come over and knock him out of bounds. So it was a 26-yard pass down to the three. And on the next throw, which may not have been Van Dyke's best, but Riley Nowakowski made a great adjustment in the end zone to catch that touchdown pass. And there were a couple other really good drives. Tawee Walker finished one off from 1 yard out. But on that drive, by my stats, and I know we're not actually keeping full stats, but I can say Van Dyke completed four passes to four different receivers to get them down to the one. And then the last drive, that the scoring drive that stands out, was something that Longo talked about. There was a play at the 1 yard line where Van Dyke pulled the ball, faked the handoff to the running back, and ran around the right side, could basically walk in for the touchdown. And Longo said the fact that he was locked in and focused in that scenario, and this is quoting him, that decision made my day, because according to Longo, the run read required for Van Dyke to make that play was so far advanced in the offense that it just indicated how much progress he has made. So, you know, you never want to make too much of one drive or a series of drives, but the more these things stack up, the more they do highlight what is possible with Van Dyke.
He's stacking success.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of times you see that with a guy, it's not a coincidence. It does mean that they're putting themselves in a very good position for the next season. Again, we're not sitting here proclaiming they're going to go 11-1 and he's going to throw for 4,000 yards. But if we're just talking about where things stand with the quarterback situation right now, Van Dyke, it feels like, has nudged ahead. And Brayden Locke, it's not that he didn't have good moments. It's just that Van Dyke has had more.
He has, and the playing behind the second team line is certainly also part of this with the quarterbacks. And even going down and talking about Mary Metayer, the third line is even a bigger question mark and having to work against that. But what I will say about Tyler Van Dyke is he's making plays, but it's also plays he's not making, if that makes sense. He's not making the really, really poor decision to throw balls where they shouldn't go. And that's kind of, I think, and I know Luke Fickell maybe talked about it earlier in the week, and he's mentioned it a number of times. It's the catastrophic throws. You can't make the catastrophic mistakes. And these last four practices, there have been, I mean, on one hand, in terms of throws that you're like, ooh, I don't know that probably should have been thrown there. If we're talking about Tyler Van Dyke, and that to me, as much as anything, is vital for him, because I think it certainly was a problem for him the last couple of years. And I know we talked about the running game, the running aspect of his game on Wednesday. I still don't think that's going to be a huge, huge part, but what it is once he gets going, I think he's fine. But if, like, you're asking him to be the scrambler that Tanner Mordecai was, that's probably not going to be the case. But designed runs certainly, I think, are going to be involved in this offense. And that is, he's a load. He's an absolute load. So I think all those things add up to what we've seen these last four practices, in my opinion, the best four that he's had, and got two more to finish off spring to try and finish it off strong. And we'll see if he's able to get it done. But there is not a decision being made right now in terms of the starting quarterback. But Phil Longo did tell us when we were sitting there, was that the interview with us that he did, that he was saying,
yes,
the, you know, people that are here, they'll know who the quarterback is. I won't need to make a decision. I've only had to make one decision in my career. The people that are here, the people that watch it, you'll know who the quarterback is. And certainly don't, as I said before, don't think we're at that point. But if I was forced to make a decision today, I think it's clear who it would be.
Yeah, I also think it's, you know, even Longo's demeanor in talking to us afterward, you could tell how good he felt what happened on the field, about what happened on the field, even though he said it was so much happened that he couldn't necessarily give a feedback right away on who did what, but it felt like there was kind of like a pep in a step a little bit. And also in just him talking about both quarterbacks, I think he genuinely believes that he has two guys who are very, I think he put the word he used was competent quarterbacks, but guys that if they have to go out there, they can. And that's what you wanted to see. But absolutely, Van Dyke has made some really good strides here, and we'll see what happens the last two practices. But it does feel like things are headed in that direction.
One more thing before we move on to another position that kind of jumped out to me on Saturday. Tyler Van Dyke could have had even more big plays.
Yes.
If it weren't for a few drops, I counted at least three, and one of them would have been a huge play, maybe another touchdown. That, you know, if those guys make those plays, and drops have not been an issue this year, or I should say in spring very often, especially with the guys that were the ones that dropped them on these days on Saturday. So it wasn't even just like how good it could have been even better. With some of the, if they had been able to make those plays, I think we would agree with that, right?
Yeah, the one play in particular, and I know I put that in my story. People said, "Well, who dropped the pass?" I don't really know if that mattered, but it was like three different guys. But one of the plays hit a guy open up the right seam. It would have been at least a 25-yard gain and likely a 40-plus-yard touchdown. So he's put some really good balls on his receivers and running backs and tight ends and given them an opportunity. And that's all you can ask for out of Van Dyke.
I'll say this. The guy that dropped it is a guy that I've been talking about how great his hands have been all spring. So yes. I don't have a problem saying, like, you know, it was Tywee Walker. He dropped the ball. But Tywee has caught everything thrown his way this spring. I don't know that he ever thought he would be that wide open in that position, right? Like, it's holy wow. And the wind, who knows what the wind was doing with the ball down the field, but it was the ball was right where it needed to be, and he just didn't hang on to it. It's the first one I think he's dropped all spring. So Ty Walker, I think, is going to help them in the pass game as well. And we'll talk about him in a little bit later, because he, again, had another strong practice, and you had a chance, and you asked Phil Longo about kind of what his role is going to be. But I wanted to talk about a position that maybe we haven't focused a ton on, just because there's been some injuries there and some younger guys there. But I thought the tight ends were really, really good. Jackson McGoohan had a one-handed catch. We talked about the Riley Nowakowski grab, and Tucker Ashcraft last few practices, since he's been able to take part and be healthy and go through 11-on-11, has been another favorite targets, I would say, of the quarterbacks. I kind of think we're seeing some things come along, and I know that those three guys are kind of like what they have. The three guys that they have all kind of bring something different to it. Jackson McGoohan, more of a receiver, still needs to work on the inside stuff. Riley Nowakowski, though he, again, probably one of the best catches of the day on Saturday, more really good on the inside of things, still working on the route running and all that comes along with it, especially going from being a linebacker to a fullback and now to a tight end, now in the second year as a tight end. And then Tucker Ashcraft kind of can do both, but that position has started to turn heads. Ever since I said I think that we could see more 4 and 5 wide receiver sets, they've started to actually really show up and make plays in the passing game.
They were obviously listening to the camp and to the fence and decided to take it out on everybody on the field. Yeah, McGoohan in particular has really flashed here. And in part, you kind of know what you had with Nowakowski because we've seen him. Now, Tucker Ashcraft has spent a lot of the spring hurt, saw a little bit of him, obviously, as a true freshman last year. McGoohan does bring a little bit different dynamic. There's two catches in particular that he made in that scrimmage that really stood out. One was a reception that went for about 30 yards down the left sideline, and he held on to it despite a major pop from safety Braden Moore, who I also really like. I think he's had a good spring. And then the other one that you were talking about, I think Van Dyke threw it a little bit behind McGoohan and over the middle, and yet somehow he reached back with one hand and still caught it for what I had as a 9-yard gain. And one of the things Longo said when he was asked about the tight ends, in addition to what you're saying, that he thinks he's got three guys with different skill sets. They all play off each other well because Nowakowski is, as he called it, the big physical, dependable bruiser inside. Ashcraft is more of that 50-50 physicality and skill on the outside. And McGoohan is the skill player still working on the inside box physical stuff. But Longo said it reminds him of the three tight ends that he had when he was at North Carolina in his last season, and he utilized them a lot. He said three tight ends might seem like a lot, but to him, it's not. He considers it to be a luxury and what he really wants in this offense. So I don't know how that's, again, none of this means it's going to translate into 30, 40 catches for any of these guys, but it's got to be an encouraging sign when we're coming off a year where, as I've said a few times in this offseason, Hayden Rucci was your leading receiver at tight end with 11 catches. If you've got an offense where you want to utilize three tight ends, you need more out of them than that. And I think they've got an opportunity, at least, to have that by utilizing guys with different skill sets.
Yes. Speaking of North Carolina, I don't know if he was actually calling him Josh Downs or not, but there was some comparisons happening between Josh Downs and Tretch Cacahuna when I asked Phil Longo about the redshirt freshman wide receiver who made his debut, obviously, against LSU. And Josh Downs made his big first game in a bowl game for them and kind of had to work his way up. And he said he's on that similar path. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be, or I don't know that Phil Longo is saying he's Josh Downs, but he's saying he's on that similar path to be a major contributor for this offense. And when I asked him about him, he kind of smiled. And then he said, Tretch knows he has things to work on, but the reason I'm smiling is because he's a competitor. And that was kind of something he had said to us when we had our interview with him before spring ball. And it's shown up, but he's just so dynamic when he gets the ball in his hands. He's extremely, extremely tough to get on the ground. And that was the case again on Saturday.
Yeah. I don't think that the comparison was, this is going to be,
yes.
Josh Downs put up ridiculous numbers. Obviously, yeah. He's in the NFL right now, but it was the comparison to, here was their starting point and here is where they can go. And that their breakout game was the bowl game for Downs. It was an Orange Bowl game. And obviously Tretch had those four catches against LSU in the ReliaQuest Bowl. But man, and I wrote this in my recap that I said it's going to be difficult to top Kekahoon on a pure catch to highlight reel ratio. Like when he's on the field, in my mind, I'm always thinking, just give him the ball, just put him in space and see what he could do, because he had multiple catches and there were a couple that stood out to me. One, and this was with the second team offense. He caught a long pass. He put a spin move on a defender past midfield. And there was another catch that he had where he broke away from a tackle attempt by a safety and went for 23 yards down to the 15-yard line. And that helped set up a field goal that Nathaniel Vakos made. But it's not the first time we've seen him make those plays earlier this spring. To me, it's still probably the best play that I saw individually by a wide receiver, which we talked about, where he caught a short pass in the left flat and juked the heck out of two defensive backs. That's what he can do. I'm interested, obviously, to see how they use both him and Will Pauling on the field at the same time. But Kekahuna, like Longo said, he's headed towards being able to be a major contributor this year. It's hard to argue with that based on what we've seen this spring.
Any other flash moments for the wide receivers that stand out to you? There was a one-handed catch from CJ Williams as well that he hit it and then he hit it to himself a little bit and was able to hold on. It was a really good catch.
Yeah, that was nice. And that actually happened to be on the one touchdown drive that Braden Locke led. Went for about, I think it was like an 18-yard catch down to the 22 is what I had it. And now I'm trying to see. So the other touchdown catch was Vinny Anthony. It was on that drive. So Locke threw a 9-yard touchdown pass to Anthony in the back of the end zone. So we've seen some flash moments from some of those wide receivers. And I feel like we've obviously spent all this time talking about the offense, and I know there's a couple other guys we will probably get to, but that's not to say that the defense didn't have its moments. It's just right. That when there are that many plays, it's very easy to highlight things on both sides, and in particular offensively.
Well, and before we go to that's the thing. I wanted to talk about the defense, Daryl Peterson and some of the other things that happened on the defensive side of the ball. But I want to talk about the running game because there were a couple of nice, really nice plays in the run game that resulted in big gains. Ches Malusi had a nice touchdown run from about 15 yards out. And we know we got to see Gideon Etuka go from 41 yards out, which, again, I don't know that he's going to have a ton of long touchdown runs, but he had one in what was essentially their spring game. And then obviously Tywee Walker is the other one that continues to stand out. And Longo, you asked him about him. And essentially what stood out was it doesn't feel like there was any kind of transition whatsoever. He's just so workmanlike. He's a leader in there along with Chez, and it just he fits.
I just love his game and what he's brought in. I mean, we've talked about this before, but he's 5'9" and he's 222 pounds. And so he's got a low center of gravity, but such good power, but so much more burst than I think people expect from him. There were several plays, particularly earlier in the scrimmage, that really stood out because he's got an ability to make some DBs miss when he gets going. And there's a two-play sequence on one drive that he had. The offense had the ball on the 18-yard line, and this was with the first team. He pushed the pile forward, and Riley Malm, the right tackle, was helping him move a little bit, but just kept churning as multiple guys were trying to bring him down. It went for a 9-yard gain, and then he ended up scoring that 1-yard touchdown. John Pius was right there at the goal line, and Walker just kind of lowered himself and scored the touchdown. But we've seen a lot of that this spring. I feel pretty confident in saying that he's going to be part of the 1-2 combo with Chez Malusi. I mean, I know they've got some other guys, but Walker has really flashed with his ability. And like you said, Longo talked about, I mean, he praised his physicality, maturity, and composure, but also the fact that there was never a learning curve with him, that he came in, it feels like he's been here the whole time, and it's been a seamless transition. And that's a pretty high compliment from Longo.
It definitely is. The running game in general, I thought, had its moments. There were also obviously things that didn't necessarily go their way. Garrison Soliday coming down and laying the boom, I think it was on Ituka, that led to a fumble on a, I think it was an option play out to the outside. So there were some good, there were some bad, but that's what you would expect. So talking about the defensive side of the ball so much, and we have been a part of this talk, has been about Leon Lowry and John Pius at the outside linebacker spots. And sometimes Daryl Peterson maybe gets lost, but he was all over the place on Saturday, making life difficult. The only time that Wisconsin had any success in dealing with Daryl Peterson, at least, individually, I'll say, is when he was trying to cover Jackson McGowan, and Jackson had a ridiculously good route, and the ball was right where it needed to be, and it was a big gain. But for the most part, when he's rushing the passer and being around the line of scrimmage, it was a terror for both the first team and the second team offensive line.
Wisconsin has to feel good about its top three outside linebackers at this point, because all of them have stacked together some really good moments, and Peterson maybe got lost in the shuffle a little bit. It's always an emphasis on the new and flashy thing, and Leon Lowry coming from Syracuse, Pius being an FCS All-American, but Peterson still led this team with 4.5 sacks last season, and he's only gotten better based on what Mike Tressel said, because of the competition that all of a sudden showed up in the room. And one of the things he said that I thought was interesting, Tressel did, was that he's taken huge strides, and that's really hard to do as you get later in your career. And I think we've seen that over the years with some Wisconsin guys, both offensively and defensively. There comes a point where guys just kind of reach their ceiling, and they're the same guy they were junior year to senior year. Now, not everybody, but I think that's got to be encouraging to hear that about Daryl. And he was an absolute menace. I have him with, sometimes it's hard on these sacks because they obviously lay up. You can't tackle the quarterback. If you do, you'll probably have your 6'8" offensive tackles laying down some fisticuffs. Like, well, did he get him? Did he just touch him? Did the quarterback escape pressure? But I mean, at least 4 sacks and maybe even more. And if there weren't sacks, he was in on pressures more than that. So, and there's a sequence where he had a sack of Locke because they marked it for a 5-yard loss. And on the next play, he forced a pressure, and that led directly to an incomplete pass to Will Pauling. So he can do that. And I know you also asked about the other thing that he's doing this spring, which is putting his hand on the ground as a defensive tackle in that look where they have 5 linebackers on the field. And Tressel said what it does for them is it allows him to go from being what maybe he's a good athlete out on the edge to he's in a spot where at least Tressel considers him to be an elite athlete in trying to win that matchup. And so it creates another advantage for Wisconsin. So yes, Peterson has been really, really good this spring.
Yeah. Again, if you're looking for a comparison of just moving a guy from outside to inside, TJ Watt did not play a ton of outside linebacker in 2015 for good reason. I mean, he was a backup in 2015 because Vince Beagle and Joe Schobert were your top guys, but he would come in on third down and be the rusher on the inside. And I'm pretty sure he had actually played a pretty big role in that game in 2015 down up in Minnesota where they rolled him, but he had I think he had a sack or maybe a TFL, but like that's kind of what they're doing with Darrell Peterson. And he's a guy that played with his hand on the ground in high school when he had all those sacks that he did in Ohio as a, you know, a junior and senior. Now, again, that was on the outside. He was a defensive end, but he, it's not like it's an unfamiliar territory to have his hand on the ground. It's just on the inside where he's able to face some different body types and maybe get it going. I think it's also worth noting that, and Tressel noted this, that if we, that if he's in there, it's because they were able to get stops on first and second down and putting them into third and long situations. And that's obviously something that they didn't do a ton of last year. They didn't, they weren't able to tee off on quarterbacks a ton because they weren't getting teams into third and long because they couldn't stop the run. That continues to be and it's tough in these situations, even though the entire practice was full go and tackling and everything. It was the most tackling I've ever seen in a spring. I mean, this spring is by far the most tackling I've ever seen for any Wisconsin team ever in the decade that I've been covering spring ball. So, but yesterday was just, it was all tackle. It's not like there was thud. Nope. Everyone's going down to the ground outside of the quarterbacks. And so I think that still kind of is a question mark for me, Jesse. I don't know about for you, but just the way that teams are going to get Wisconsin into, you know, and playing two defensive linemen, they had a lot of success running the ball last year. And you wonder if they're better fitted or better situated to handle that this year with some of the guys on the outside and also remaking what they are inside as well. But that continues to be my biggest question for the defense. I don't know about you. I think they are going to be able to pressure the quarterback, but I don't know if they've made it enough strides. And again, they're still working on trying to make strides there because they're looking for defensive tackles in the transfer portal. They're looking for some guys that may be able to help them this fall. But if I'm looking for a negative, if I'm looking for something that is still a significant question for me, that's probably it on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, if I'm going to pick something, it would have to be that because they didn't show it last year, and there's no way to know whether they're going to show it until you see it in the games next season. From a pure picking one specific position group, my biggest question is going to continue to be the defensive line. Yes, they've got a couple guys who are back who are contributors, but beyond James Thompson, you didn't get a ton of productivity. Now, I realize that Kurt Neal and Ben Barton weren't getting the bulk of the snaps. Neal obviously played a ton, got the start in the bowl game. So they're going to get their chance. And how much further down the depth chart do you go? How much does Cade McDonald get? How much does Elijah Hills get? Who was someone that Tressel said had impressed him or been perhaps ahead of where he thought he would be. And as you said, they're still trying to add another body from the portal. But you need your line to play really stout in order to be contributors to stopping the run. And when we're talking about having these different kinds of packages where people can tee off, well, that's because you're in a third and long situation. Well, as a defense, you got to make sure the offense is put in that spot to begin with. And there was too often last season where that just didn't happen. So that's got to be a key question. And I know we haven't talked much about the secondary at this point, but I do think that not having Ricardo Hallman for this spring has been beneficial for the corners because it has given a load of experience to a bunch of different guys and made them better.
Anybody stand out for you?
In among the secondary?
Yeah.
Well, I think Max Lofi had a couple of really good moments. He had a play where he played really good coverage on a receiver on a pass that went into the end zone. Now, that ball was thrown out of bounds, but he was all over him. And then there was a play where Walker had the ball in open space. I think it was on the right side. And Lofi came up and just dropped him. I think he's been in really good. And Tressel was asked about Lofi, about did you know anything about him? Or how much did you know coming into the spring? And Tressel said zero. And then he repeated it again, zero, because last season, obviously, Lofi was hurt. And Tressel said, you know, you heard some people say, oh, well, you know, he can be a good player when he's healthy. And other people say, like, I've never seen him play, especially the staff that's been here. But obviously, Lofi has just continued to work. And even though he has a different body type from Austin Brown, I think Tressel feels really good about him. And we've seen this spring with Kamoi Latu out, they move Brown back to safety, and Lofi has basically gotten all the one reps in the slot. So, I mean, there's other guys who have stood out, like Hunter Wohler. Anytime he's in the vicinity, you want to watch that dude because he's just going to lay the wood on somebody. But for guys that you weren't sure what to expect in the secondary, he has stood out. And Nizer Forkirin, who Luke Fickell has said on two occasions now, is probably the most improved guy from where he was last season. I would be surprised if they don't open the season next year with Hallman and Forkirin on the outside.
And RJ Delancey too, right? Like, I mean, he's the one that obviously has gotten a ton of the one reps of late. Like Jonas Tekulona, it felt like Jonas Tekulona was the one for first six or seven practices, and now it's essentially been RJ Delancey the rest since then.
Yeah, and he's going to be a factor too. So they've, again, that goes back to when you don't have someone like Hallman, it's given a lot of guys opportunities, especially with the first team, and I think that's going to make that unit even better.
It will. They've had obviously some attrition there with AJ Tisdell going into the transfer portal. I think there's going to be more names here. Corner is still packed right now, and we'll see how that plays out. Like the second team, I thought he didn't make a ton of plays, but I like the thing when I look at with Mari Snowden is like even at his size, like he's 6'4", but he's not thick, right? Like he's still pretty lanky at this point. He has no problem coming up and like taking on blockers, taking on like tackling guys. Like it just, he may not be the strongest guy, but he doesn't back away from it whatsoever. And that was like kind of like a question, like how is he going to be? Is he going to be tentative? Is he going to be like softer? And he's not at all. And so he got a ton of work with the second team over the last seven or eight practices. He's kind of moved into that number two spot along with, you know, Jones to Cullen on the other side. And then obviously Jace Arnold is there. And when you get Ricardo Hallman back, it pushes everybody else down. So you wonder if, you know, there's avenues to playing time for some of these guys. And we'll see. It feels like the attrition is not done yet, and they have until May 1st to go into the portal here. And that doesn't mean obviously they have to choose a new place. But I think, you know, especially depending on what they saw on Saturday, reps wise, what they've seen over the last few practices, reps wise, maybe they move on. Tommy, Matt, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but it was a tough couple of days for the camp, Jesse. Really, really tough. Obviously, our Prince, down at Iowa, ended up in the portal. The Big Ten West champion quarterback, who's you know, gonna find a place to go.
Do you not want to say his name? Is this like Lord Voldemort?
I don't. He's our prince. Deacon Hill is our prince. Still very intoxicated by the arm strength. Very intoxicated by the arm strength. Always will be. We thought when that news came down on Tuesday, kind of thought about going down and looking at some of the dents that he had put in at the McLean Center. We didn't do that. We didn't do that, but it's something that I may go and do in the off season here, but I hope he finds a good spot. You know, going from the dude was committed to Fordham last year at this time, or right about this time. And he ended up being a starting quarterback in the Big Ten West champions. So was he the reason for them being in the Big Ten championship game? I'm not gonna say he was or he wasn't. That's for everybody else to decide. I'm gonna say that Deacon Hill put his, you know, he did his thing, and then obviously with Tommy McIntosh.
Yep. Should I just take it from here? I mean,
you should. It's a tough one for you. That was a tough day for you.
I really liked him. You know, to quote the great Hawk Harrelson, he was my pick to click in that recruiting class. A 6'5", like just watching his highlights, man, no one can hang with this dude in Michigan. He's a long strider. I thought he was going to be a big time playmaker here. And obviously it never came together. And it's funny because if you think about last spring, especially that the launch, while there was mostly a failure to launch, like he was very good. And he got a lot of opportunities, and it was not going to happen for him. He was working with the third team offense. And I should say, everybody who's in the portal at this point, by the way, none of them are surprises, because none of those guys were going to have significant roles for Wisconsin next season based on where they were now and barring some injuries. And he was one of them. So yes, a tough week for the camp. And we should also say Mike Jarvis, the defensive lineman, has also since entered the transfer portal. So, the unofficial scholarship count for them is right around 84. And obviously the maximum under the NCAA rules is 85, and they're still trying to get a defensive tackle, but Still some movement here going on. And I do wonder about the cornerbacks in part because there are set to be 12 scholarship cornerbacks on the roster for next season. And that is with Tisdale's departure. Now they're spread out throughout all the classes, which is a pretty good thing. And that includes three freshmen who aren't here yet. So we'll see whether anybody else decides to move on. But yeah, tough week for the camp.
Tough week, and we don't know where Vito Calvarucho is right now. So, but he's certainly in our thoughts as well. The absence or the departure of Tommy McIntosh leaves Chris Brooks Jr. and Vinny Anthony as the two scholarship wide receivers still left over from the previous regime. So, and Chris Brooks Jr. didn't do anything this spring. I mean, he was in a yellow contact, no contact jersey, but he didn't really, even in the one-on-one stuff, didn't do a ton. He's still obviously coming back from a number of leg injuries. I mean, he was off to a great start last spring and broke his foot. And then he missed. I don't think he was in any of the fall camp either. And I don't know that he even dressed for any games last year. So he is, but when he was on the field, he kind of flashed a little bit. So you wonder if they're going to be holding on for that. Real quickly here, Jesse, NFL draft, Wisconsin, yes. A couple of guys taken, several more ended up as undrafted free agents, but Tanner Bordellini comes off the board first to Indianapolis, and then Braylon Allen later in the fourth round goes to the Jets. I know you're not a big NFL guy, but do you feel good about one or the other more so than the other?
Only in terms of career longevity, because what we've seen Wisconsin offensive linemen do, but I'm certainly eager to see what Braylon can do in the NFL. And if he can stay healthy, what that looks like against grown men, because he was always the grown man, even at 17 when he got to college. So seems like good situations for both of them. And Tanner, gets to stay in the Midwest. So that's probably good news for him and his family.
So far four guys have signed as undrafted free agents. You got Tanner Mordecai going to San Francisco. You've got Mumajong Mehta going to Cincinnati. You got Hayden Rucci going to Miami. And you got Peter Bowden staying in the state and going up to Green Bay to compete for that job. Do you have of those four, do you think, which one do you think has the best chance to hang on and earn a spot?
No idea. If you need a long snapper, Peter Bowden was about as sure as he got. I'd say the one I'm most intrigued by is just Tanner Mordecai. It never really came together at Wisconsin. Obviously, he had the broken hand, but there was a new offense. There was everything that we've gone over during the past year, but has so much talent. And can that skill set translate where he can carve out a role on the practice squad as a backup? He's the one I'm most interested to see.
I think Peter Bowden's got a chance. Orzich, the guy who was the Packers long snapper last year, they signed. I mean, he was signed as a free agent last year. We'll see if he is able to hold on to the job. But Peter Bowden was number one ranked long snapper by most people, so it's not like he's, just another body to throw up there. I think he's in actual competition. I think he's got a chance to win that job. We'll see. The other ones, it feels like a little bit of a steep climb up, but I guess we'll find out. Wisconsin still has two more practices to go, so the Badgers will be on the practice field on Tuesday, and then again on Thursday. We'll be back. We'll be back on Wednesday to talk about what we see on Tuesday, and maybe we'll have some more names in the transfer portal and some more potential guys coming in. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.